Before we get started today, I wanted to talk about my favorite prenatal supplement. It's by Needed. Needed was created by two moms and nutritionists who knew women deserve better. Their products are third-party tested and support women before, during, and after pregnancy. And guess what? Even dads, too. Our community gets 20% off your first order with code VBAC, VBAC. At thisisneeded.com. If you are taking a prenatal already, that's okay. I encourage you to listen to episodes 109 and 406 as we talk with Needed's co-founder, Julie, about what you want in a prenatal and if you are finding that your prenatal is just not cutting it. Just like a provider, it's never too late to change. All right, women of strength, let's get into today's wonderful episode. Hello, women of strength. Welcome to the show today. We have our friend Lily Nichols. She is so incredible. She's been with us before talking about gestational diabetes. She has her Real Food for Gestational Diabetes book, and we dove a little bit more into that and nutrition and how it can improve our pregnancy and how we can maybe make gestational diabetes a little less overwhelming, because I know that that can be a thing. So, and then she also has her Real Food for Pregnancy and Real Food for Fertility. And today we're diving more into just nutrition as a whole. What does it look like? When should we really start paying attention to our food? Let me just tell you right now. It's now. It's now. It's never too late. It's now. And I feel like even when we're not pregnant, we need to be focusing on our nutrition, which she talks more about in Real Food for Fertility. But we talked about some really fascinating things. I learned a lot, including how long it takes for an egg to mature and benefit from the nutrients, and then sperm as well. It was kind of alarming. I was like, oh my gosh, we really need to be focusing and dialing in on our food and our nutrition a little bit sooner than I even thought. But we also talked about how it's never too late. So if you're just finding us today and you're in your end of pregnancy and you're listening to this episode and you're realizing, oh crap, I haven't really been doing any of this like I had years ago, it's not too late. So make sure to take notes. You're probably gonna, this is maybe not one of those that you want to drive, or you can drive and listen, go re-listen, or buy her book, because you guys, all three books. I haven't read The Real Food for Fertility yet, but she's got such a wealth of knowledge. And if you can, press pause right now and go give her a follow. Lily Nichols RDN. That's what she is on Instagram. Lily Nichols RDN. And follow her. She really does put out so many amazing things. She's always looking for the most new, updated information and studies and stats. She's got a weekly email, so many amazing things. So, we're going to get into the intro, and then I'm going to turn the time over to Lily Nichols. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Welcome back to the show, Lily. I'm so excited to have you. I feel like your knowledge is just so extreme and always extending, and the things that you bring to our community is amazing. And I feel like when it comes to nutrition, that's something that is often overlooked or overwhelming, so we ignore it. And that's probably what I would say. That's where I was when I was pregnant. It was overwhelming. And my personality sometimes is if it's too overwhelming, I'm just going to push it to the side, do what I know because that's comfortable and easy. That's easy. And if there's anything humans like to do, it's make our lives easy, right? But I really do kind of want to dive into nutrition and a little bit before conception. And then we'll kind of go through pregnancy and everything. But are there different things we can do before conception with our nutrition?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think a lot of people think about nutrition in pregnancy and, in order to have a healthy pregnancy, you're going to do all these things during the pregnancy itself and have a positive outcome. And obviously, there's plenty of research on the role of healthy eating during pregnancy. I've written a whole book about it, Real Food for Pregnancy, right? However, there are things we can also do in advance of conception that can set ourselves up for a healthier and easier pregnancy as well. And that actually goes for both partners, by the way. I mean, a man's only contribution to a healthy pregnancy is what he does in advance of conception, right? It's his sperm quality of whatever sperm happens to fertilize that egg. So a lot of this can apply to both partners. But when we're looking at, optimizing the chances of conception, we're looking at optimal sperm and egg quality. And you have to rewind the clock several months before conception for this window of time that the sperm or the egg cell is developing. For sperm, it's a little over 70 days. For the human egg, it's a little bit more complex because we have all the eggs already in our ovaries, but most of them are underdeveloped follicles. And then your body has to recruit an underdeveloped follicle. It chooses which one it wants to develop into an egg. And that whole process, getting it to the point where it's a fully developed egg ready to ovulate, is about 220 days. So that's like a 7 to 8 month lead up to ovulation. The last couple months of which are most sensitive to specific nutrient levels and, levels of inflammation, things like that. However, like you can look at even a longer time frame than just a couple months for egg quality as compared to sperm quality. And yeah, it does play a role in rates of DNA fragmentation, for example, in both egg and sperm. That can affect the risk for certain, genetic issues that might develop in the embryo, that then some of which can be life-threatening and result in early pregnancy loss. So if we can optimize egg and sperm quality in advance, you're in a good place. You're also optimizing your nutrient reserves leading up to the pregnancy. So our micronutrient concentrations are reflective of what we're consuming day in and day out. And those micronutrient levels are affecting the levels of, our hormones and how our thyroid is functioning and so many other things, whether we're anemic. Like all of these things can also play into our not only our health preconception, but also the risk for issues later on in the pregnancy, right? So if we're, get our blood sugar and insulin levels in a healthy place preconception, we're then reducing our risk for gestational diabetes. And if we get our inflammation down and our micronutrient levels up, we might be reducing our risk of things like preeclampsia, right? If we attain a healthy body weight preconception, that sets the stage for a healthier pregnancy as well. There's things that you can kind of, check the boxes on in advance. None of it's a guarantee, right? Some pregnancy complications happen to very healthy people, and it's like you can't always prevent every issue. But it for from my perspective, it's like we're stacking the deck in your favor, and you'll be better able to cope with whatever's coming your way if you're starting with like a really strong foundation.
Absolutely. So with my first pregnancy, like I said, I was overwhelmed. I just didn't want to pay attention to it. I knew that, you need to eat healthier, and it was the eat for two because you're now eating, right? This is like what was told. And I remember eating, I rarely remember eating a vegetable. I'm not even kidding you. I ate a lot of things like orange chicken or like Taco Bell, like really, really fast, easy. I was young. I didn't educate. Our work schedules were weird, and I was just picking up dinner on the way home and going. And that pregnancy was night and day from my VBAC pregnancy and birth because I really like dialed in on that one. And I just swear so much that food can impact and nutrients impact our body and how it's growing a human. I mean, we're already putting it on so much stress to the body, right? And if we aren't stacking it up with good nutrients and I don't know, just better in a better environment for our body, it's gonna maybe react. And like you said, you could have like the healthiest, you could eat all organic, you can have everything, check every single box and still have something happen, but doing these things before. So what types of foods would you say dialing in? Maybe we're gonna start like that 200 mark, day mark, right? We're thinking about conceiving. We're now knowing or we're learning that our eggs take time. It takes time. What in the beginning, and I'm assuming that's going to follow through, but what types of foods specifically would you say, hey, dial into some of these foods?
So first and foremost, and I might go about this a bit more generally than like specific foods being
Yeah.
like you need that exact food, but a bit more generally, like big picture, I would focus on eating enough. Okay, there's a lot of women who undereat
Eating enough.
substantially.
Yes. Oh, I would want to talk about that in a minute. Let's not forget. Okay, keep
Okay,
going.
we could circle back to this in more detail, but eat enough for your hormones. There are a lot of women who are undereating. Some of them are undereating intentionally to try to fix a hormonal issue, ironically. Others are undereating for trying to maintain a certain body size. Anyways, undereating is a mess for your hormones, and so just try to eat a sufficient amount of food on a relatively regular basis, okay? No skipped meals. Your body, especially your reproductive hormone levels, thrive with a sense of safety, and it gets that safety signal by having enough fuel coming in. So eat breakfast, eat lunch, eat dinner. If you're hungry between, eat snacks, okay? Don't do the whole intermittent fasting thing. When you're eating, think with the mindset of blood sugar balance, and this applies to everybody, by the way. Some individuals, they need to be much more dialed in on this, like women who have polycystic ovarian syndrome. There's usually some sort of blood sugar insulin component going on, but it even applies to other women as well. You want to keep your blood sugar, your blood sugar fluctuates, but you don't want dramatic spikes and dramatic crashes because that is another signal of lack of safety to your body. It's an emergency when your blood sugar spikes super high, and it's also a very stressful emergency when your blood sugar drops too low from you not eating. So get blood sugar balance. Yes, you want to eat sort of on a regular basis, but you also specifically want to be eating enough of the foods that don't spike your blood sugar. So your protein and fats, and a lot of your protein-rich foods naturally have fat. So as long as you're hitting your protein mark and not obsessively taking the fat out of everything, you're in a pretty good place. You don't have to like eat sticks of butter to accomplish this. Nothing against butter, but you don't need to like eat a ton of fat in order to accomplish this. So that might look like starting your day with maybe eggs instead of starting your day with a bagel or cereal or a smoothie made with only fruit. Like if you're gonna do a smoothie, add some Greek yogurt or cottage cheese or a good quality protein powder to it, but don't just start your morning with only fruit or only grains. Like same thing applies to oatmeal. If you love oatmeal, that's fine, but like add some protein to it. And if you're not feeling super great in the couple hours after having that oatmeal, you might want to run a couple experiments, see where your blood sugar is at after that meal, and experiment with some different options, right? But when we do that, we're setting the stage for the whole day for better blood sugar balance. So a protein sufficient breakfast is really key. Of course, with your protein, you want as much variety as possible, animal and plant foods, in my opinion. And you also want to be incorporating some antioxidant rich foods to keep inflammation at bay. So it's like a mix, right? You need plant and animal foods, in my opinion, and you need them to be nutrient rich, not processed in a way where you're taking everything good out of them, right? Ultra processing your grains takes all the fiber and B vitamins and most of the minerals out of it. Taking the yolks out of your eggs is taking out the fat, the vitamin A, the choline, most of the B12, right? So you want to be eating foods in their whole form that haven't been processed in a way where you're taking out things that are beneficial.
Oh, that's such a good reminder because sometimes I feel like when you're focusing on protein, and this comes from someone who used to like religiously count macros. Like all the time. And I'd be like, oh, I need more, I need less fat, I need more protein. And so I would do egg whites only, and I'd drop the yolk, and I'd do like five egg whites with one egg, but I was cutting so much that my body needed not even pregnant, let alone being pregnant. And I feel like it's extra hard to get all the nutrients that we need when we are pregnant, because we're growing a baby, we're doing a lot of work. So I love that you pointed that out. And I want to circle back really quick before I forget on the not eating enough, because there are so many times that we get messages from community members that say things like, especially in the end of pregnancy, I am too scared to eat too much because my baby's getting too big. My doctor's talking about the size of my baby, or I had a large baby last time. And a lot of the times these large babies, in quotes as I'm saying this, are like 7 to 8 pounds.
Right.
That's a very normal baby. That's a very, even a 9 pound, we're good. But we are scared to eat, like being scared to eat, that we're going to grow a baby that is too large, especially I feel like in this VBAC world, we are extra sensitive to the size of our baby. And it's so scary to me and aggravating to me that we are feeling like we can't fuel ourselves in fear of that big baby or whatever. When I feel like when we're not eating, we're actually giving ourselves like a bigger ding because we're not fueling our body to be strong for birth.
And consistently under eating could be a risk for preterm birth, which they're
Yes.
probably gonna section you if that happens, right, with the history.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a
So
double-edged
it's,
sword.
it really is. And so it's hard because I can't tell everyone, like, you have to eat, but guys, you have to eat. Like, eat, please, please, please eat. Don't be scared of food. And like Lily's saying, like, dive into like the right types of foods. Get your protein in, your plant and your animal. Like, really, I don't know, just arm yourself. I don't know. Any other suggestions you'd
Yeah.
have on that?
Yeah, it's so when I brought up under eating, I was speaking to the preconception cohort, right? Because you can have this issue called hypothalamic amenorrhea pop up when you're under consuming, your hormone production gets so low and you throw off your like communication with your hypothalamus and your pituitary and your ovaries and your thyroid and like things go awry and you actually stop cycling eventually. But in pregnancy, that's another component to think about. So just a couple things like to have in mind. A, it's normal towards the end of pregnancy to maybe feel like I am so like you don't have room in your stomach to eat a lot, and it is okay to lean into your hunger and fullness cues and like moderate the amount of food you're eating to your comfort level, okay? You don't need to force feed yourself, but you still need to eat something. So keep that in mind. From the VBAC perspective or the concerns over a big baby, I mean, I have just a lot to say on that matter with all the work I do in gestational diabetes, because it's another big, fear-mongering thing with gestational
That's
diabetes is your baby's going to be big. And, it's to me, it's a bit unfortunate that we overuse ultrasound so much, especially for the measurement of
Yes.
baby size, because I have seen time and time and time again those ultrasound measurements be off. I've seen them be off by up to 2 pounds. Oh, we're expecting this baby's going to be 10 pounds. And then they have like a 7 pound, 15 ounce baby, like perfectly healthy. I've seen it off in the opposite direction as well. So there's no way to perfectly predict the size of your baby. Like those ultrasounds can give you extra information, but if you are doing your part, we have to be honest about what is in our control. What's in our control that plays a factor with baby's growth or so-called excessive growth? I'm not saying that that can't happen. We do have legitimate cases of macrosomia. Is your blood sugar levels and your weight gain? Your weight gain is reflective of how much energy your body is accruing. To some degree, you can also have differences if you're if your, fluid levels are a bit off and you have an issue with your
Yeah.
electrolyte balance, some of the weight gain can be fluid related. But weight gain is a proxy of how much food you're eating or how much energy you are or are not expending. And then your blood sugar is a proxy of types of foods that you're consuming, of course. And then there can be challenges to your blood sugar and insulin system in pregnancy. Some are more prone to high blood sugar than others. But all this to say, if you're eating an amount of food that's appropriate to your body and your weight gain is tracking as expected for your stage in pregnancy, and your provider needs to graph this on a prenatal weight gain grid, not just guess and say you're gaining too much weight. I see misinterpreted weight gain trends constantly.
Yep.
Very few providers are actually trained in this. I know this because I train OBs in the Institute for Prenatal Nutrition. I've had OBs even be like, wow, I've never used a weight gain grid. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what a problem.
Yeah.
You gotta track it and see if you're gaining appropriate for your pre-pregnancy BMI. If that's all in check, and we've also confirmed your blood sugar is in a good place, you're not just doing the glucose tolerance test and moving on, but say there's signs that baby's growing larger than we're anticipating here, and you're following up with home blood sugar monitoring, and you're seeing that your blood sugar is in range, like within gestational diabetes target treatment ranges. Like you're not spiking over 120, 130 milligrams per deciliter after meals, then you're doing pretty much all that's in your control for your baby's growth. I mean, movement would be part of the picture as well because it's a way to burn energy. So the movement and the eating picture would play into the weight gain, right? But like you're moving as much as you comfortably can. You're eating an amount of food where you're not force feeding yourself that's sustaining appropriate weight gain for your stage in pregnancy, and you've confirmed you're not spiking your blood sugar. That's literally all that's within your control.
Yeah.
There are absolutely cases where some women simply have larger babies and they're perfectly metabolically healthy, and that is their norm. Not all bigger babies are a metabolic mess. In fact, I
Yep.
was actually a 9-pound baby, believe it or not. So I don't have, metabolic or weight challenges. I've been lucky in that regard, but I was a 9-pound baby at birth, right? Healthy 9-pound baby, like they happen. So try not to get like too caught up in the ultrasound said this and therefore da 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 da. Like
Yes.
check the boxes that you're taking care of yourself as best as you can. We want to be proactive about it, but we don't want to be absorbing so much stress from external sources if you're already doing everything that you can. Like that's all
Right.
you can do.
Well, and heightening our cortisol doesn't help in any of that stuff.
Right.
And it doesn't, and then if we've got like blood pressure or anything, I mean, just it doesn't help.
I know.
Be within your control, eat healthy, and like you said, like we're doing way too many ultrasounds and just it's kind of crazy and it's annoying to me, but you can also, I'm just gonna say, like, if you're being told that you need a growth ultrasound, you can say, is there a medical reason why I need this? Is there any concern for me or my baby? Like, it's okay to also question if they don't need to do growth ultrasounds every week. They just, because you had a 9-pound baby the last time, and you're a 5-foot-1 human. Like, no, you don't need to do that. Hey, Women of Strength, I want to talk about one of the companies we wholeheartedly love and feel you should know about. It's a company called Needed. Needed was created by two mothers and trained nutritionists who knew there had to be a better way when it comes to women's health. When I found out about Needed, I was immediately inspired by their passion and drive to help women all over. They've developed high-quality supplements that support women before, during, and after pregnancy. And they didn't just stop there. They have also created products designed to support dads and kids because the whole family's health matters. The women behind Needed are truly change makers. They've brought together a collective of over 10,000 practitioners who work with them on everything from education to product development, and they've set a radically better standard for women's health. We are so grateful for the work they are doing. And here's the best part. Our amazing community gets 20% off your first order. Just use the code VBAC at checkout when you head over to thisisneeded.com. Again, that is code VBAC, V-B-A-C, for 20% off your first order at thisisneeded.com. We love Needed so much, and we know you will too. Okay, so let's talk about cravings, because on the opposite side of not eating, sometimes during pregnancy, our body just naturally craves stuff. You know, we've all heard about the pickles and the random things that people will crave. And I think pickles sometimes is because of the salt. Our body maybe needs salt. But yeah, can we talk more about cravings and is craving a sign of deficiency? Could it be a sign of deficiency somewhere?
Yeah, cravings are something that requires a closer look because there can be different reasons behind the cravings. So you can absolutely have cravings related to a nutrient deficiency. Cravings for ice, especially chewing on ice, is actually a sign of anemia, super common sign of anemia, often an iron deficiency issue. Some of the cravings for non-food items, pica or pica, like you want chalk or drywall or dirt, those can be deficiencies in minerals as well, especially calcium and zinc. So there can be ones that are nutritionally driven. You mentioned pickles. Mm-hmm. Cravings for salty food is a clear sign you need more salt. Lean into that for sure. You actually do indeed need more salt in pregnancy because you have a lot more fluids in your system. Mm-hmm. Think about it. If you're dehydrated and you go to the hospital for IV fluids, they don't just give you pure water. At bare minimum, they're giving you a saline solution. You mm-hmm. need salt, okay? So don't restrict your salt intake in pregnancy. Sometimes there can be micronutrient deficiencies where I'll see women are more drawn to certain foods. So I've worked with women who were vegan previously, and then during pregnancy, they have like an undeniable craving for like burgers, steak, oysters, like really high iron, high protein, high vitamin B12 foods. So there's something there in certain cases. In other cases, some of the cravings are simply because there are foods that have been engineered in a way to be highly addictive. Like food companies spend billions of dollars making our foods highly addictive. So if you're craving Flaming Hot Cheetos or something, it's probably because, well, it could be a salt issue, right? Maybe you want the salt and that's what your body is thinking of for salt. But it's probably because those are literally engineered to be addictive. They may be reminding you of a time in your life where you were happy and felt comfort. And you're hanging out with your girlfriends in high school eating Flaming Hot Cheetos or whatever, right?
Oh my gosh, there can be, I totally did that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So there can be times when it is simply like your body craving comfort or something familiar, like a meal that your mom would make when you were a kid. So my recommendation is really to kind of lean into it. If your body is craving something that you know is a perfectly healthy food, there's no reason to stop yourself. If you're craving something that you're like, oh my gosh, this is
Flaming Hot Cheetos
full of like red dye number 40 and like high fructose corn syrup, I know this is not really providing my baby with key nutrients. You know, it's fine to have an occasional bite of something that's not perfect. We're not perfectionists here, but maybe there's a place for like, you know, I remember I craved sour gummy worms in my pregnancy, and I was like at the grocery store looking at the package. I'm like, these sound really good, but like, look at all that crap in there. There's like, this is not good for me. And I came up with, what I really wanted was like something that was sweet and sour. It wasn't the sour gummy worms that I really needed. It was sweet and sour. So I went for dried tart cherries. Oh. And that actually satisfied the craving. It was kind of like chewy texture, like the gummies, but it was sweet and sour. That's really what my body wanted. Yeah. And that flavor combination worked really well for my nausea at the time. Mm. And so it wasn't like, maybe you can decode what's behind the craving, what your body's asking for, and see if there's, you know, a healthier alternative. And, you know, if there's not, occasional, you know, not healthy food is going to be fine. But when it's like, I am craving this really, ultra
Really bad.
processed thing every single day, maybe there's a place where you can make a swap and satisfy the craving, but still be providing your body with, some useful nutrients, not just empty calories,
Yeah, you're satisfying both. You're getting better nutrients, but you're also satisfying your craving. Is there ever a point where if someone is just undeniably like insanely craving these things, where maybe they should go chat with their provider and like maybe look at blood and blood levels and things like that? Or is that really not necessary?
I mean, for some of the cravings, like I mentioned, if they could be a sign of anemia, it wouldn't be a bad idea to run like an iron panel on a CBC and
Yeah.
see where you're at. And
Because.
I should mention one more thing that can drive cravings is blood sugar imbalances. So when your blood sugar is spiking often, it's also crashing. It's doing the opposite. And anytime your blood sugar is crashing, your body is seeking quick energy. So if you're finding your cravings are for things that give you like a pick-me-up, like sugary things, starchy things, snacky crackers, chips, caffeine, things that would give you like an immediate source of carbohydrates or sugar or caffeine. That can be a sign that you might actually be under-eating, and specifically under-eating protein, because if you're under-eating your protein, which again often comes with fat, those are very blood sugar stabilizing nutrients. So, somebody who is under consuming protein and fat, I find they often have a lot more cravings. And so, sometimes the cravings don't really need decoding beyond eat enough stabilizing, satisfying protein-rich foods and don't starve yourself. And then you're probably going to have less cravings for the junk food and the snacks and the candy at the other times.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Okay, so what about, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier where like people at the end of pregnancy, that's when they're like, I'm scared to eat, but maybe it's not even that they're scared to eat. It's just like, I'm learning now. I'm listening to this episode now and I'm learning like I haven't really been doing well with my eating at all. Sometimes I feel like people are like, oh, I failed, which I hate that word. I don't, guys, don't believe that you've ever failed. I mean, we don't fail, right? We just might need to pivot and make a new choice or something like that, but we don't fail and there's no failing in birth. But if someone feels that way, is it too late? Is there something that we can do mid-pregnancy as we're learning about these things? Or maybe we've discovered your book, or maybe we got a late diagnosis of gestational diabetes. We've discovered your book and we're like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of things I could be doing. Is it ever too late?
It's so funny you asked this because I wrote a whole article about this on my site called Is It Something Like Is It Too Late to Benefit from Nutrition Changes in
Hey,
Pregnancy?
we need to put
So
that in the show notes.
link out to it. The short answer is it's never too late. You have to take every day as it comes. I am still, by the way, learning new things as new research comes out, and I'm like, oh man, I wish I knew that back when I had my two babies, but
Right?
research didn't exist yet, so we're always just making the best of what we know at the time. And sometimes life is too overwhelming to prioritize nutrition. I get it. So we have to give ourselves a break. We all have a lot on our plates. The reassuring thing is for many nutrients, the studies that have been done in pregnancy, like for example, some of the studies done on omega-3 supplementation or vitamin D supplementation, sometimes the intervention doesn't even start until the second or third trimester. I mean, you think about trying to like run a research trial where you're recruiting pregnant women. It's hard to catch people in the first trimester, right? So a lot of times these interventions where we show, oh, there was all these benefits to baby's development or a lessening of complications with this intervention. Those interventions didn't even begin until more than halfway through the pregnancy. And with something like gestational diabetes is a perfect example. Typically that's diagnosed between 24 to 28 weeks. I argue that we should screen for it earlier, but nonetheless, that's the standard of care. And we still see positive impacts on those intervention trials with nutrition changes that are implemented solely in the third trimester. I mean, you're only talking a couple of months of nutritional changes, of improving their blood sugar balance, that we're seeing these beneficial effects on baby's growth. You're seeing a lesser risk of C-section or assisted deliveries, right? All because of changes that only took place in the last few months of pregnancy. So I caution you to look at, oh no, I'm too late. Oh, if only I had learned that. We're all doing the best that we can with the information we have. So just make the next best choice at your next meal or snack. And none of us are perfect. I'm eating junk food sometimes. I don't like completely avoid restaurants because I don't like the oils they're cooking in, right? I can identify that I feel better if I cook at home, and I also sometimes need a break, and I sometimes need somebody else to just do the cooking. And it really truly is gonna be okay if you do, the 80-20 rule or whatever split of percentages you want to apply. Even 50-50 is better than 0%, attention to your nutrition, right?
Absolutely. And that's so with my first pregnancy that I was telling you that I like went and I can't even tell you how many times I picked up orange chicken. Like I can't even tell you. It was a lot. I had a lot of swelling. The crazy thing is I fortunately never had like crazy high blood pressure. But the swelling was beyond it was insane. You guys, I had people tell me I was unrecognizable. Like
Wow.
I was huge. I had to go buy special shoes, and even those, my feet were pouring out of them. I just had trunks. And looking back, all the things I was eating, I'm like so inflammatory. Like I was retaining so much fluid because I wasn't feeling right. And then with my third pregnancy, my second one too, but my third pregnancy, things were a lot different. And like you said, I had moments where I'm like, I have two kids. I'm gonna go out to eat tonight. We're gonna go out to eat. And then when we went out to eat, I just looked at the menu and was like, I'm gonna make a better choice. Like
Yeah.
in this restaurant, there's a lot of things on here. Some are better than others, where I would get like a steak and asparagus with like a sweet
Right.
potato versus steak and a loaded mashed potato with butter and sour cream and all that, which is, again, it's okay to still do that. But like, I just would try to look at the choices that I had and try to make the better ones that I could on the menu.
Yeah, totally. Even the simple act of just, I'm not going to order the deep fried entree. Just have something that's like a plain cooked protein, your steak or your chicken or your fish or your pork chop or whatever, with veggies and a healthy whole food
Solid.
starch, like a sweet potato, baked potato. That already is a much healthier option. Or even fast food, right? You can get a, lettuce wrapped burger instead of the one with the bun, or you can choose to skip the soda and get a water or an iced tea or something in its place. Like there's always a chance for improving, your choice at any of those restaurants. Yeah, for sure.
So our last episode, which we're also going to link in the show notes, we talked a lot about gestational diabetes and your book, but can we dive in just a tiny bit on, if you are having digestive, if you have gestational diabetes, what that type of approach would look like in a restaurant? I'm assuming similar.
Yeah, so similar, you'd want to be aware of where the carbohydrates are coming in that particular meal. So, and the quantity at which that you're consuming. So, if you've been monitoring your blood sugar for a little while, you've probably learned like where is your tolerance limit for how many portions or how large of a portion of carbohydrates you can handle at any given meal, and not have a spike in your blood
Spike.
sugar after that meal. So definitely prioritizing a protein, not a breaded deep fried one, because the breading would add carbs, and then the
Spike, yeah.
frying in inflammatory oil has its own negative carryover effects over the hours after you eat. So something like steak, chicken, fish, eggs will be great. Have a vegetable. So whatever that is, whether that's a salad or a side vegetable, a just be aware if the dressing or sauce with it is sweet. That can affect things. So, got to be careful because some of the salad dressings are really high sugar. You could always ask for like a lemon wedge and a side of olive oil or something, or just use a tiny bit of dressing and then add lemon and olive oil to get the flavor of the dressing, but not as much sugar is in
Too
there.
much. Yeah.
Sauces in general are just a bit difficult with restaurants. Curries often have a lot of sugar in them. You don't think it does because it's savory, but they do often have sugar. Things like an orange chicken would have not only the breading, but the sweet sauce in it, right? So those are like pretty high sugar. And then, yeah, just look at, so, you know, I'm telling you about hidden carbs, but then there's the actual like carb portion at the meal. So are you having potato or pasta or rice? If you're not really sure on what's going on with all the sauces and the dressings and the whatever, some people do well just completely skipping the dedicated starch portion at the meal or keeping it really small. And, you know, I also just want to call out that having an occasional high blood sugar reading does not make or break the health of your pregnancy or how well controlled your gestational diabetes is. So don't get too concerned if you had a restaurant meal, it's totally out of your norm and you had a spike. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of
That's
things going
likely
into
gonna
that
happen.
meal. Yeah, that you just don't know what's going in there. You have so much more control at home. So make the best choice that you can with some of the things I just talked about, but don't be too concerned if it's a little bit higher than your average. It's a one-time meal. It'll truly be okay.
It will balance back out.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm so glad that you pointed that out because, again, like I said in the beginning, it can be so overwhelming. And I think it actually can become unhealthy for us mentally if we're like spiraling because
Oh, yeah.
because we've been doing so good and then we got a high, spike or whatever it may be. Like, again, we're doing what we can to control, we're making the best choices that we can based off of the information that we have, and we need to offer ourselves grace, like you said earlier. Okay, so in your books, you talk about the gap between the old dietary policies and new research. Can we talk a little bit more about that? And like what guidelines or what's lagging or maybe what's progressed in like a positive way?
There's a lot that's still lagging. Since my books came out, I mean, the first one, Real Food for Gestational Diabetes, came out 10 years ago in 2015. We have seen some international policies change. The Czech Republic completely overhauled their nutritional guidelines for gestational diabetes following what I presented in that book, and they are seeing huge improvements. So we see
Love
little
it.
changes. You know, maybe in some other countries, they also see clinics overhauling some of their recommendations. But the dietary guidelines for America, like we'll see what comes out with the 2025 ones. Those are not out as of the time of recording, but I would hope that some of the areas that they improve would be overhauling the protein recommendations. Those are far too low. Protein researchers have been calling this out forever. The RDA is set on bare minimum levels based on an outdated model of monitoring protein requirements, which are nitrogen balance studies. We have so much more advanced and sophisticated research methods for looking at how much protein does the human body really need and how much does it need to function optimally and for optimal metabolic health. And it's a lot more than what our guidelines are, arguably double for most people what the recommendations are. So those need an update. We need to become less obsessed and restrictive with fat intake, particularly taking a closer look at the type of fat and the quality of fat and where the fat is coming in, because we have a fair amount of research showing that when you're getting things like saturated fat, which everybody is still afraid of in the guidelines, and you're getting that saturated fat from whole food sources like whole fat dairy and steak or red meat, you're not seeing the same detrimental effects as when you're seeing high saturated fat intake from ultra processed foods, right? So it's the package that it comes in. So I would hope that that gets a little more attention. I would hope that we offer, at the very least, the opportunity for a low carbohydrate diet to also be considered within a healthy dietary pattern. Currently, our guidelines say you need essentially half of your calories from carbs or more, and many individuals do better on a moderately low carb, and for some individuals, a very low carb diet, depending on what's going on with their blood sugar and metabolic health. And that absolutely can be the right approach. We need to give people more permission to personalize and stop pushing the like 9 to 11 servings of grains per day. Like, it's way too much for most individuals. From there's all sorts of little nitpicky things that should change on micronutrient recommendations. Many of the RDAs are set too low. This is especially true for pregnancy, where we're working on very limited data. There's very limited studies in pregnant women specifically. So most of those recommendations are based ultimately, originally, on data from men that then was adjusted via mathematical estimates for women and then adjusted further for the weight gain of pregnancy. And for some nutrients, we have studies on how much of a nutrient the fetus accrues over the course of the pregnancy. But suffice it to say, they're very limited. So I would hope we get some more attention to those. And so a handful of nutrients I think need a lot more attention would be the choline requirement and the vitamin D requirement. Those we have randomized controlled trials in pregnancy itself, really strong data that we should use to revise those. There's a number of others that probably could use some attention and definitely research funding towards, but those two, I think we have enough data that we should revise those recommendations.
I had three babies, and never in all three of my pregnancies was I ever talked to about choline or vitamin D or K2 or even vitamin Bs. Like, I never, that was never discussed. And hey, I want you to focus, like, eggs are higher in choline. Like, I want you to try to get this many eggs a day. No, none of that was discussed. So here we are now, it's 2025. So, I mean, I had my baby 9 years ago, but my last baby 9 years ago, but we're still lagging. We're still lagging. And so it's so hard when we're trying our hardest and we're not even being given the, best opportunities through good studies and getting that information. So I think diving into books like yours and some other and blogs like We Love Needed and their blogs and people who I really, really honing in on what's lagging to try and get any information we can is so important. So tell us where we can find your books. I mean, I have both of your books sitting right here. I actually didn't even have gestational diabetes, but I have your gestational diabetes book,
Oh, thank you.
and recommend it to all of my clients and obviously our community. And then Real Food for Pregnancy is just amazing. So tell us more about where we can find your books and when we should start reading them.
Yes,
I
and
think right away.
now there's Real Food for Fertility as well that came out in 2024.
Yes.
So
I don't know if I knew that you had that book.
it's a giant book,
That one
just
is a
so.
little thicker
I
than
mean,
Real
yeah, look
Food
at
for
Real Food for
Pregnancy.
Pregnancy. This even has like notes stuck in it, but yeah, it's a big book. If you go over to my website, lilynicholsrdn.com, and click on the books tab, you can scroll through for each of the books. It'll tell you where to buy. Generally, Amazon, as long as it's shipped and sold by Amazon, is a good place to go. I also carry Real Food for Pregnancy paperback in my bookshop if you want to buy direct from me. Ebooks you can get many places, but I'd recommend Amazon Kindle or Barnes and Noble, a reliable bookseller, because it's come to my attention that there's all sorts of counterfeit and legitimately
What?
counterfeit, but also a lot of like knockoff ebooks that are fake. So I don't want you to get an inauthentic copy and get bad information because the book actually isn't legit. So yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing. The internet is a wild place.
Yes.
So I mean, if you are not yet pregnant, or I should say not currently pregnant, I would get Real Food for Fertility. that is really focused on the non-pregnant body. Even if you are done having babies and you're looking for a solid book on nutrition, I would do Real Food for Fertility because it's
Okay.
giving you the information to optimize your health and optimize your hormone levels. It's going to make the transition into perimenopause much smoother if you're supporting your ovarian function and your thyroid health and your
Yeah.
digestion, all the things. So, Real Food for Fertility if you're not pregnant. If you're beyond, I'd say if you're beyond about a year postpartum, again, Real Food for Fertility. If you're pregnant, Real Food for Pregnancy is what I would do. If you are early postpartum, I would also do Real Food for Pregnancy because the last chapter is all about
Nursing.
postpartum. You know, there's a time point where, like, where do we cut off postpartum? That's really talking about the immediate postpartum and breastfeeding nutrition and replenishing your nutrient stores. But when you're getting to the point where you're now like, I'm thinking about my next baby soon, Real Food for Fertility. The gestational diabetes book you really only need if you have gestational diabetes, if you've gotten diagnosed, because I cover prevention and testing options for gestational diabetes in the Real Food for Pregnancy book. So the GD one is really like you got diagnosed and you're freaking out and you need a game plan and it will talk you off the ledge and support you through that process and help you figure it all out. So yeah, any of the three. I also now have a twin pregnancy nutrition guide ebook over on my shop as well. So if you have a
Gosh.
twin pregnancy, I almost consider it like the missing chapter on twin pregnancy because I don't cover twin pregnancy in Real Food for Pregnancy. So if you
Yeah.
happen to be pregnant with twins, that would be an additional one because there's lots of really nitpicky specific adjustments you need to make on calories and protein and even some specific micronutrients as well.
That is amazing, because I'm sure there's a whole different thing when you're growing two humans, not just one.
Yeah.
I always tell my clients with because I just like I have a library and I kind of lend some of my books out to like our doula clients sometimes, and I'll just be like, let Lily help you. Like, go get this book. Or here's this book to borrow. Let Lily help you because you're amazing. You're so amazing. And I'm so grateful that we had you here today. Is there anything else that you would like to cover or touch on or send a message to the community?
Gosh, well, I mean, just keep at it. One meal at a time, one bite at a time. You could do it. You could do hard things. If you're a practitioner, by the way, and you want more education, you like touched on the lack of education that a lot of OBs have in nutrition. This is true. The same actually goes, sadly, for dietitians and nutritionists as well. I actually surveyed my audience, and 74% of people surveyed said they only had a single lecture or two on prenatal nutrition in their entire, 5-year education that you have as a dietitian. So, if you want extra education, I do now run a professional mentorship in prenatal nutrition called the Institute for Prenatal Nutrition. We only enroll one group per year. So, I think by the time this episode launches, we'll see if it overlaps with when we're opening enrollment again. But that would be a good place to go if you want extra information, because that's a really limiting factor when it comes to as a person getting quality care. It's very hard. And having been through my own pregnancies, I felt like I needed to educate my providers a lot. It's kind of exhausting. It's nice to have providers who actually know all of this stuff already. So if any
Yes.
providers are listening, then take a look at IPN.
Yes, because we need more help. And I understand that time is limited when it comes to OB and midwifery care. Like they are stretched thin. We're so grateful for them, but we cannot miss this. We cannot miss this. And it's being missed every single day.
Well, and it makes your life easier because if you have less complicated, medically complicated patients, they have less
Yes.
medically complicated births, especially for the midwives, the home birth midwives. You can keep more of your clients in your
In
care if they're
care.
healthier. But even for the OBs who are delivering at the hospital, you have just easier births, and that makes for happier patients who are less litigious and,
Yeah.
It lowers your C-section rate, which clients are
Yep.
looking at, right? So it is all of benefit if we can put more attention onto the nutrition side. And it is heartening to have more providers go through the program and then like report on their improved outcomes, because a lot of this
Yes.
stuff really comes down to some pretty low-hanging fruit nutritional interventions. A lot of the stuff is not rocket science. It's not crazy. It's just not information that a lot of people were taught or have readily available. So, yeah, it's
Yeah.
been fun.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for all you're doing. And definitely, you guys go check out in the show notes. We're going to have the links for her website, her institute program, your blog. We're going to go find that blog. And I think the blog was on it being too late, right? That,
Yeah, it's called
yeah.
something like, "Is it too late to benefit
Is it
from nutrition
too late?
changes in
We're
pregnancy?" I'll shoot you
going to
the
find it.
link.
Yeah, we're going to get that. It's going to be in the show notes. So go buy the books. You might just want to buy two books. You might want to buy both the fertility and the, real food for pregnancy, because you're probably going to be in both of those
You'll
states.
be in both of those
You're
stages
going to
at
be,
one point in time.
yes. So go grab both of her books. Lily's incredible. And then where else can they find you on social media?
I'm most active on social media on Instagram, although I'm not as active as maybe I should be.
It's hard.
It really is, right? My website's really my main hub, lilynicholsrdn.com, and I do send out, right now I've been pretty good about sending out a weekly newsletter. They're information-based, research-based kind of content. I'm rarely like selling you stuff and being annoying in your inbox. So if you go over to my website and click on the freebies tab, if you get any of those freebies, you'll be on my newsletter list. And that's a really helpful way to stay in touch and to see like what new research papers am I reading? What new information can we glean from this? New blog articles, podcast interviews. I put a lot of stuff into those newsletters. So yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And I just know so many people are going to benefit from this, and mark it on that saved episode to probably tune back into and listen again, because there's a lot to unpack within this episode.
Yeah, thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to the vbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.